in a world where the music industry is ruled by pop drek.
This guy's just like a fucking scumball.
Are you fucking insane?
Where upside down is right side up.
He's probably gonna be like, CTE, fuck it, we're playing with leather helmets. What do you think of that?
But he's a bitch.
Where political correctness rules.
Like, someone should have fucking capped him then.
It takes a special kind of asshole to cast Bill Murray in a film and make him not funny.
It's good to know there are some people you can still lean on.
I don't know. How about cancer?
We say what we mean and mean what we say.
I think that's the reason why America sucks.
And was a piece of fucking horse dung.
This is the Ranting and Raving Podcast with your host, Steve Sandwich Hanisch.
Get the fuck off my plate.
And Christopher Orangio.
They're all dying.
And it starts now.
All views and opinions expressed in this podcast are performed purely for entertainment purposes only.
Our policy is we're comfortable with our bodies. You know, if somebody wants to help themselves to an eyeful, well, we say enjoy the show.
What is going on, everybody?
We're back, baby!
We're back. Back again. Sandwich
Season
and Chris's are back. Back again.
Fucking six.
I know. We have to do a movie. After
of the
this
Ranting Raving. Yes. Six seasons and a Ranting Raving podcast feature film.
What's going on, guys? We are award-winning motherfuckers.
Oh, that's right. I've forgotten how to do this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Award-winning writer, director, actor, Christopher Orangio.
Hello, and I am award... Hello! Whoops. I am award-winning screenwriter, Steve Sandwich Hanisch. And together, when we combine powers, we make up the Ranting and the Raving podcast.
And we also, when combined, we are probably 90% of our wives' headaches.
Yeah.
At this
and
point.
Vice versa.
Oh,
quite
yeah.
frankly.
Oh yes, quite frankly. We have a lot to unpack.
A lot of content. We gave ourselves about 2 months worth of pre-production for this season, and we didn't need it. So here we are. See, the thing is about this episode particularly, I have never watched so many things I've never seen in a month. Like, I literally had this list as I struggled, Chris, to get 5 things listed, because this whole winter was the season of the rewatch, or the off season of the rewatch.
Yeah,
I should say.
But you just gave me extra gray fucking hair, because yeah, you're like, hey, you can add whatever you want to this
we
list.
Had so
and then
so
I just kept watching stuff,
pulling back the fucking curtain. In February, Chris and I had a call. We were like planning out season 6. What are we gonna do? What are the episodes we should focus on? Is there anything weird we want to do? And we built our list out, and I was panicking, waking up with cold sweats at 3 in the morning that I couldn't find anything. So this episode, our welcome back episode, as per usual, is best things we've watched during the break.
Yeah.
So I didn't have nearly enough to do an episode for, so I'm like, I got to watch a couple things I've never seen. No problem. I got like a month and a half out to do this. I went on such a fucking tear. I kept texting Chris, can we make this a 7-part list? Can we make it 9? You know what? Fuck it. Let's do 10. Can we do 20? Is that too many?
So,
like, I kept watching shit.
If you guys remember last year.
You should be so proud of me.
Oh, dude. And you said you watched some good ones. So I don't
My
know.
List is fantastic.
So I don't know if you remember our Christmas episode when it was revealed that I never saw one movie on Carrie's list. And so then I was like, man, I'm struggling
Which
too.
Which was that? Refresh my memory.
Well, it's going to be on this, but catch me
oh,
if you
oh,
can.
Oh, okay, okay. Oh.
Yeah, but anyway, I kind of went back and I was like, wait, can we add, like, it doesn't have to be new stuff. It could just be things that I've never seen over break. And Steve said those crucial words, yeah, go for it. And I was like, the floodgates just opened. There's a lot of things on here that are from... Just not in 2020, even in 2021.
Oh, God,
so,
yeah, no, absolutely not.
And I think you were kind enough to allow me to add a TV show. You know, Jess and I watched one new TV show that we both fell in love with.
I have two on here.
So, yeah, if you didn't hear it, this is the best things we've watched during our break.
Right, but also, how was your break? And also, there's no podcast updates. We usually like to open it by saying, hey, here's what we changed.
Yeah.
We've changed nothing.
No.
Absolutely nothing. Actually, the only thing we have changed is we now have what we were going to call the gun of truth.
So what is this
Chris
for
and I
yeah.
each have a Nerf gun, knockoff, And whenever someone Schmurf says gun. Something that's either ridiculous or is easily disagreeable with, or we just don't straight up like, we will be punished by firing little foam rockets at each other from about a distance of 4.5 feet.
Yeah. And you know what?
You're going to hear it, and we're going to feel it. And yeah. I feel like this is going to be a great way of keeping us accountable. So when when Chris says something ridiculous, like, I hate Matt Damon, I can fire a shot into his temple. Things like that.
And when Steve says that, you know what? That movie was actually not that bad. I'm going straight Nerf gun to the dome. And you know
what?
That
should be an episode. Movies that are under 3% on Rotten Tomatoes that I don't think are that bad.
Oh, my God. Yes. This Nerf gun will get extra work. But the thing is, I think your wife got you these for Christmas, right?
Yes, after we hung out at your place and we had a Nerf war, and I got child in me, which is me, got extremely jealous.
So I'm taking acting classes, and my acting teacher was like, hey, Chris, do you have kids? And I was like, no, why? And she's like, I see a basket full of Nerf guns behind you. I was like, no, they're mine. And she was like, oh. And then there was this awkward silence, and then I was like, so how was your week?
You should have said, you're jealous, ain't you?
I should have just said, yeah, I have kids. But no, I have a basket full of Nerf. You know, Jess bought me.
You should have made it awkward when you were like, yeah, we have one child and we don't speak of her. And then just
speak of her at all.
Just breathe heavily into the microphone.
But yeah, my break was good. It for those who, I hate saying it like this, but for those who care, who've been following, this time last year when we came back, I told you I got engaged.
Yes. That's right. I was there.
We had to, yes, you were. And we had to just delay it for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But Jess and I are actually getting married with just our family, about 30 people, in June. June 12th will be our official wedding date.
Congratulations.
Then April 2022, we're going to just renew our vows at the venue that we had. And I'm not going to bash the venue, but they were just not cooperative. They were very hard to deal with. And you try to understand, but they just... everyone's affected by it. But other than that,
I'll make you a promise right now. I'll take an Upper Decker there.
Yeah, I got to think of the fattest motherfuckers going. But you're not that fat anymore because you got a goddamn Peloton.
No, but all I'll do is what my insurance company's been doing to me lately, which is just fucking with my stomach medication. So I'll just take all of it at once.
You know
and
what?
And I'll just sit on the upper deck of whatever second floor.
We just have Indian food.
Is.
Indian food.
Yeah, anything with spice. Anything. Yeah. If I even smell curry.
Indian food. Their food is 90% water. Their whole, like, their meals. You know, I'm drinking half their food.
With some abhorrent spice thrown into it.
I could have it once every like 2-3 months. But yeah,
that's great. That's a big life thing. Congratulations. I didn't have any big life things here. I did take a lot of time to. I did a lot of writing, but nice. Not for Fiverr. A lot of my own stuff, which was really nice. I actually wrote a new script for the first time in a while that I really enjoyed. I actually started it last year this time and really liked the first like 5 pages I wrote. And I was like, I'll get back to it. And then I never got back to it. But I finally finished that, done some revamps on it. I'm really happy with it. It's already placed in a couple competitions. So I'm really proud of that.
Every time I hop on social media, it's a new Laurel or a new.
Yeah, which I'm really happy with. So I revamped the other scripts as well. Because that had been something where I worked on those for years and it just, I got tired of redoing it. Yeah. So this kind of motivated me. I revamped all the scripts. I took out some of the really pointlessly edgy humor I had in a couple of them to just help with, you know, something I learned with screenwriting in college was it's not always the joke that has to be in it. It's all about story and character. And it's very true. So this, you know, I cut out a couple jokes that just weren't landing. Renamed Vietcom officially. It is now called Run Through the Jungle.
Okay. Why'd you change that?
Because, again, that was just, I felt like it was a joke title. It was always a placeholder title.
Okay.
And if you didn't like the name Vietcom, because that in itself is almost the first joke of the script, it kind of put a sour note in your mouth about like, oh, is this just going to be a script of puns? And I didn't want that.
Okay.
So Run Through the Jungle is perfect for the story
it is. I love that name. A Vietcom just... Every time I like thought about it, I was like, oh, it's like
it was
Viacom or like, you know, there's certain like it
right.
just reminded
so
me of certain things, but it was very, very funny.
So that's also the thing. Like I'm referencing a term that was fucking made in the 60s. So if that didn't immediately come to mind and you thought Viet Cong, you wouldn't get the joke. So
yeah.
That was always a placeholder title that just I ended up running with it. But yeah, so that's basically what I did over the break, and
that's
then
a smart move.
I prepared for this episode.
And a few other things. We we're a part of a film together. Spoiler alert for Jess Vasquez.
I played a pivotal. I can't even put into words how important my character was.
Oh yeah.
Without me, the whole thing
would
unravels.
Be in shambles. They're actually having a live viewing up in Pennsylvania May 12th on a Wednesday. I think I'm going to go because it's an outdoor venue, and I just want to go during the week.
Do you know the name of the venue? Do you
know that? It's Ambler Theater in Ambler, Pennsylvania. I think it's the first short series. I think that's the name of the festival. But she's had a lot of films play there.
Yeah. So look up this Jess on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah,
and
you'll see like
find the
promos
links for Spoiler Alert playing at the Ambler Theater.
And then we got instant into a festival.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, hang on to your shorts. It's going to be virtual this year, so we will drop the link for it. Not sure yet if we are nominated for anything. It would be pretty cool if we were. I was able to be a judge on that festival, and I saw some really good projects. And BK and Hiram, who've been guests on this show before, you know, Brian was like, dude, why the fuck did you pay for submission to this festival? I was like, I'm not going to pull that card. He's
absolutely
like, well,
not.
He's like, next time we got you. And I was like, and I'm not going to grade my film because it would be biased.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, no, it's really funny. Like, you and Steve, like, I didn't know Steve really could act. Like,
I was vehemently against Chris saying that. I thought we could use all the help possible to get in to that festival.
And we did,
but
I think
on the
we
up want to.
But I don't want to speak for you. I would like to wait to enter into more festivals so we can actually go there and network it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing against virtual festivals. Just half the best thing about going to a festival is meeting people there.
Right.
And I would just, you know, like to do that. And, you know, God willing, things are a little bit normal towards the end of this year and maybe early next year. We'll do it. So, but that's pretty much like...
Send it.
I'll send that. That's pretty much all that really happened.
Yeah,
in the last few months. Last time you heard our voices was Christmas, and yeah, nothing's really happened. Then like we've had shit fucking snowstorms and
yeah. And over that time, we've still had you find people giving our episode some listens. We're now at 14,200 downloads for the show, even though we hadn't been releasing anything new since the end of December.
You're one of the 14,200 listeners, you are the real one.
So I would like to start off because I actually also have honorable mentions.
I'm already ready
on
bro.
This giant fucking list.
I'm ready to fucking shoot you.
So just
wait, hold on, time out. You have honorable mentions, dude? Yeah, I gave you 10. You're like, yeah, I got 15 honorable
bro,
mentions.
And I still left some off of here because I watched so much. Not garbage, good stuff. So real quick, I watched Soul, the Pixar movie.
Okay.
It was good, but not as good as their other stuff. I've now watched the Justice League recut and Batman versus Superman Ultimate Edition and Shazam. I went on a big DC run.
What'd you think of Shazam?
I like Shazam. I thought Zachary Levi did a really good job. I never watched Chuck or anything back in the day, so I didn't have any attachment to him. But I thought that was a cool story. I didn't know anything about that story at all.
I didn't
but that's
really
the
either.
The Black Adam, right, is in that.
And then
kinda.
Did you hear, this is before we started recording, it might be a few weeks till you hear this, Pierce Brosnan is attached to the film
Yeah,
now.
Dr. Fate, yeah. Love me some Pierce Brosnan. I watched Hateful Eight, the extended version on Netflix. I don't know if it counts as a movie or a TV series.
They broke it down into episodes, right?
Yeah, so it's
a
four-part series. I thought it was fucking amazing because I texted you about it. I couldn't tell what was cut from the original movie and what wasn't. Like, the editing job they did on both accounts was really fantastic.
Did they add footage or add scenes to this?
He didn't do any reshoots or anything like that. This is just stuff that, like, little extended things where, like, no scenes were cut out, I don't think.
Okay.
But it was a little bit more
extending
character and
the
story explained, I guess. Like, especially when it comes to the outlaw crew and, like, why they're doing what they're doing. There was a little bit more there. But that was fucking incredible. And I watched Frantic, which is a Harrison Ford movie from the late 80s that I had never seen before about, you guessed it, Harrison Ford playing a doctor, and on a European vacation, someone kidnaps his wife. So the whole movie is literally him running around going, where's my wife?
Who played his wife?
I don't even know. I know I didn't recognize her at all. I didn't recognize anyone in the movie but Harrison Ford.
Damn, bro. You are.
But it was also...
You're a slave to that motherfucker.
It was good. It was good. Not good enough to make the list, but it was still good. And that's my honorable mentions.
I have no honorable mentions because I follow rules. So, yeah. Do you want to start with your number 10?
Sure, I'll start off with my first movie that I'm going to say during this episode. My number 10 in our 6 through 10 of best things we've watched over the break. 2017's Mudbound.
Oh,
I had
God.
Never seen Mudbound. That was famous for being like the first Netflix original to win an Oscar, right?
I think. But what did it win? It didn't win a major category. Did it win music? Did it win?
It was something. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't a major category, but it was like.
Because they weren't nominated.
Oh, streaming services are for real.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. It got a 97% in Rotten Tomatoes, a 7.4 in IMDb. Critical consensus: Mudbound offers a well-acted, finely detailed snapshot of American history whose scenes of rural class struggle resonate far beyond their period setting. So I just watch it and turn it on because, like I said, I needed to watch something I hadn't seen before for this list. I had no fucking idea, first of all, that Jason Clarke was in it. And anyone who knows me knows I think Jason Clarke's one of the most underrated actors in Hollywood. He was fucking incredible, as usual, playing just a torn working class drunkard like he does in most of his movies. But he was fucking phenomenal. Like I said, the actor who plays Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad was absolutely great. The one scene at the end was, I couldn't believe how fucking brutal that was. And if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen the movie, strap in. It's just hilarious. I mean, what a great comedy
Spoiler
this
for
movie
people.
Is.
Who gives a shit? It's been 5 years. It's been 4 years since it's been out.
Well, so it's just, well, it's not really a crazy spoiler. It's about racism in the South. And in what, the 60s?
Yeah.
I think. Or maybe even earlier than that. Maybe it was. No, it was the 40s, wasn't it? Because wasn't it World War II?
I think
it was based around.
Yeah.
So there's a lynching scene at the end of the movie with shocker, one of the main characters. But holy fuck, was that brutal? I felt I don't cry at movies, and I was this fucking close.
Really,
it was a brutal scene and tremendously well acted from every who's the
lead
fucking,
actor.
Yeah, who's
I don't know.
What's his
Jason
name?
Mitchell, I believe, is his name, and he was Eazy-E.
Mitchell.
He was
yes!
Eazy-E in Straight Outta Compton.
Yes.
He
and,
made me almost cry in Straight Outta Compton. When
Garrett Hedlund.
Garrett Hedlund. Oh,
that's
my.
The actor.
Underrated as fuck.
Dude, absolutely. He was fantastic in this. Like I said, I had heard good things and I knew it was going to be a good movie. I did not expect the emotional impact that every scene in this movie had. It was just great. It was one of those movies that like they knew how heavy and impactful every scene was. And it was so well paced. It never rushed through anything. And I think that was the point. Like, South is slower anyway, and the racism was very blatant, and even when it wasn't, it was still there. So I feel like the slow pace of this movie really pushed those themes to the forefront, and I thought it was fantastic. So it's not going to be a light watch if you want to just have a good time, but it's definitely a movie that's going to be worth your time.
I love it. You know, every year on my Instagram, maybe we could personally do it on ours. I do like a top 10 movies and TV shows of the year. And I could have added a few honorable mentions, and I will add one that I think everyone should see. It's the documentary on D.B. Cooper. I didn't really know who D.B. Cooper was. When I watched Without a Paddle, I thought D.B. Cooper was a fake character. But then
right.
I found out, you know, the
it's an HBO, right?
Yeah, and the documentary is worth watching. That's my honorable mention.
Okay.
Were you done? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm all set. Onto your...
My number 10. Now, I watched this movie twice because I watched it by myself, and then Jess wanted to watch it. I watched it with her again. You know, before watching it, everyone was slaughtering it, and I was just kind of like, you know, God damn, man. Like,
what year?
It's this year.
Oh, okay.
And it's The Little Things with Denzel Washington, Jared Leto, and Rami Malek. Now... Yeah. The first time I watched it, you know, I have a bad thing. I need to just put my phone away because when I'm watching a movie, I'd like to read trivia alongside it on IMDb without, you know, they have the spoiler warning. I don't go down there.
Right.
Found out that this script was written almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was, they wanted to shoot it in the 90s. And for whatever reason, maybe I'm making shit up. I think they didn't want to because Seven just came out and it was just like. They didn't want to touch it.
Yeah, they're like enough of the gritty police mystery thing.
Yeah.
We're gonna move
on. I watched it the first time and I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Then I watched it again with Jess. She asked me, I was like, I didn't mind it, but it didn't really wow me.
Yeah.
But then you watch it a second time and it's just kind of like, I just appreciated a lot of the things. I guess there's certain things I would have liked to seen Denzel do because it, you know, throughout the movie, you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. So throughout the movie, obviously, there was like, these rumors of him becoming like obsessed and and this isn't that. And you mm-hmm. never really saw him become obsessed. You saw Rami Malek's character become obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was awesome because I've always wanted to write something in that vein of like a, you know, a character getting lost in the work, whether it be, you know, undercover or just like, I love that. I'm a sucker for that shit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Denzel being my favorite actor of all time, I think I'm like, okay, I'll give him a little leeway.
Yeah.
But at the end, I really didn't mind it. Everyone knows, if you know me, you know I don't like Jared Leto in anything.
Yeah.
He kind of pulled me out of it a little bit, but then there was times where he was just kind of like just creepy. Like, there was just certain things, like certain looks he did, I was just like, I felt very unsettled, you know? I'm
super confused by Jared Leto, because I don't like him, but he always plays the same character archetype, so I don't know if that is how I'm supposed to feel by the characters he plays. He was even a fucking creep in Blade Runner 2049. Like, that's just what he is.
Yeah.
He plays creeps. And I don't know if it's because he does a great job portraying creep or if he's just a fucking creep.
Is there another word for it, though? Like, because he was
no,
he a creep?
Just
in a,
creep.
Was he a creep in American Psycho to you? I think he was just an asshole.
Well, that was young Jared Leto.
Okay.
Like, same thing with him
Fight
in
Club.
Fucking Fight Club. He wasn't Jared Leto yet.
Yeah.
He was almost the guy from 30 Seconds to Mars.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I watched that, and I was... I'm sorry, were you done?
Yeah, yeah.
I was expecting a lot more from it. The ending left me feeling really like I had wasted my time watching the movie. I thought they were leading to something. And I think what my problem with it was, I think Rami Malek's a fantastic actor. I think he was horribly miscast as his role.
That's the main note from everyone.
Yeah,
my dad said the same thing. My
so I don't want to spoil the movie for anybody.
Because it just came out, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll say that. I think Rami Malek was miscast. I think it was misleading the way he was portraying his character. I felt to do something else with it, and I thought there was going to be a couple different turns at the end.
Yeah.
And there was not. They just drove straight ahead, and I was disappointed in that. I get what they were doing
mm-hmm.
with it, and I do value and appreciate the simplicity of the story.
Yeah.
But I thought there was so much more they could have done with that, because what was their apex and climax, I felt was just a setup for something bigger. So when the ending actually happened, I was just let down by it. And I feel like that's probably the big critique a lot of people have with it. Because again, Jared Leto was good in it. He played a creep very well.
Yeah,
Denzel,
especially in the...
always phenomenal.
Yeah, especially
and
in the interrogation
And even the supporting
scene.
Cast, and it was great. And like I said, Rami Malek's great. I didn't feel like this was suited for him. Because I felt the way he did his character was misleading.
If I only watched it once, it wouldn't have been on my list. But when I rewatched it with Jess and I don't know. Maybe I'm just a weird. I don't know. I need to watch movies.
But then you probably knew
once.
What it was, and you could appreciate it a little bit more.
Yeah, but I also
because you weren't expecting anything.
You know, I tell people a lot. Like I'm going off track. My bad. But my dad sent me a video about like.
You'll not go off track.
Oh fuck! Right in the tit. But no, my dad sent me a video of like this YouTuber breaking down a Tarantino film, and my dad's like, is that how it really is to make a movie? I was like, oh, well, Tarantino goes kind of above and beyond with like the shots meaning something and all that. But I told my dad, like, the way he watches a movie is not the same as the way I watch a movie.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
even you, like, really.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I'm watching it, I'm breaking down lighting, I'm breaking down a bunch of shit.
Yeah, I do that in rewatches, never first watch.
Yeah, maybe I gotta reverse that.
Because the first watch is always taking it in, the story and what's happening in character, and then the second time you go, oh, I see what they did there.
That's how I felt with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I feel like you and
yeah.
I were like
yeah.
that.
Because again, you go into these uber hype films with whether you like it or not, you go in with expectation.
Yeah.
And then the second time around, you go like, oh, fuck, that's clever. I like what that was. And, you know. But that's a good pick. I applaud
10.
You for being brave and putting it on there. Yeah. Like I said, I was kind of disappointed by it, but I understood why people liked it, and I understood why people didn't like it. It was kind of a middle of the road mystery thriller.
Yeah, but I'm a cuck for that shit. So
yeah, you are. My number 9 is a movie that came out in 2006, and I never saw it. And everyone said how great it was, and I just never watched it because it was subtitled, and I just was being a stupid American about it. But it was actually really fucking fantastic and super mystical and fantastical in all the right ways. It's Pan's Labyrinth.
I never saw it.
It's fantastic. It's Guillermo del Toro, so you know it's going to be good. Like, I always knew it was going to be good. I just never watched it because I was like, I don't want to read. And that's so stupid to do.
I remember one time really quickly, my college roommate was like, oh, man, it's a Friday night, man. I don't want to. We were watching that movie Battle Royale. He's like, I don't want to fucking read. I read all week. And my roommate's like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. So it's fantastic. Because, again, it's this thing where you settle into it. Like, after the first 2 minutes, you go, like, I don't care. I can read subtitles and see what's happening emotionally. But it got a 95% Rotten Tomatoes, an 8.2 on IMDb. Pan's Labyrinth is Alice in Wonderland for grown-ups, with the horrors of both reality and fantasy blended together in an extraordinary spellbinding fable. It's great. It's just... it's not horror. It's not straight fantasy. It's a little bit of both. It's Guillermo del Toro just doing his thing. It's based off an old, I think, Spanish, like, almost the scariest still children's straight kind of a tale, which is, I think, what he gets a lot of his stuff from. But it was great. It was really super fucking enjoyable. There was no point when I was watching that where I thought that I made the wrong decision in hitting play.
That's good.
It was a great movie from beginning to end. And as soon as you can get past reading subtitles, 100% worth it.
As soon as you not become an uncultured swine.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I don't know anyone in this. It's in Spanish.
Is this his best movie, in your opinion?
Probably. Probably. I think Mama was super fucking scary. Not that Mama.
Yeah, no.
This was Mama. That was super fucking scary, but yeah, really good. Crimson Peak was really good.
I really enjoyed that.
Pacific Rim was really
good.
What
about the one where that girl fucks the fish?
Dude, Shape of Water was really good,
was
too.
Was it? I haven't seen it.
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah. That was really good, too. Hellboy. Yeah. I mean, those are great movies. Yeah. But Pan's Labyrinth is just, like, I can't even explain it. Like, it wasn't comedy. It wasn't fantasy. It wasn't a thriller. It was, like, kind of a little bit of everything. It was just a perfectly well-crafted movie from, it was, like, 2 hours, 20 minutes, but it flew by. It was just great. It's Guillermo del Toro, so it's, like, the aesthetics of it is, like, it drags you in immediately. And, of course, shit just gets weird, and you just get dragged into his world of, like, weird mystical shit, and it's awesome.
Are you excited for the Pinocchio he's gonna do, or?
Super terrified for whatever the fuck that's gonna be. I mean, holy shit. He's gonna make Pinocchio absolutely horrific.
Yeah, I haven't seen any photos or anything like that, but I just could imagine it's just gonna haunt my dreams forever.
It's definitely gonna be Geppetto fucking puppets or something. It's gonna be awful. Awfully good. Scary good.
That's right up Steve's alley. Geppetto just giving it to someone in the ass.
Geppetto just slinging his salami around his wood chips.
All right, enough talking about Geppetto now.
What's your number 9?
All right, so this is a movie I've always been told I would love, and I don't know why, you know, I was like, okay, grandma, get it. Okay, boomer kind of thing.
Oh, but not to cut you off. I did say on our last episode what I was going to do of a break was watch a bunch of Alfred Hitchcock movies.
And you didn't.
I didn't watch one. Yeah, please.
First bullet of the season. You didn't watch one.
I will say I contemplated it at several occasions.
Which movie?
I never settled on one, but I did put a bunch on my queue.
Yeah, okay. Motherfucker. All right. My number 9 is a movie from 1983 called The Big Chill. Have you ever seen it?
I've heard of it. Never saw it.
Man, I think you would like it a lot.
The Big Chill?
It's okay. Music from our dad's generation. That's a lot of classic rock.
Like, what I'm into.
So it's basically... Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt, Tom Berenger, man, a bunch of people.
It is very 80s so far.
Yeah. What's her name? She's from Poltergeist. She was in Dexter. Anyway, it's, let me read the synopsis for you, because it was just something like right up my alley. Mm. A group of 7 former college friends gather for a weekend reunion at the South Carolina vacation home after the funeral of another of their, IMDb fucked that up. After the funeral from one of their college friends. Kevin Kline is in it.
Is it a comedy?
I mean, it has bits and pieces, but it's more drama than anything.
Okay.
Dude, it's just Glenn Close is in it, William Hurt, Kevin Kline, like I said, Mary Kay Place, Meg Tilly.
Wow.
Joe Beth Williams, and the friend that passed away is a big name,
okay,
but isn't in a lick of the final cut because the director didn't want him to be in. But he is a big character. I don't want to ruin it for
anyone.
He
plays a corpse? Jesus.
Pretty much, yeah. but man, it's just, I don't know. I think maybe it's one of those things where it's one of those movies where, like, man, to me it was timeless because it's like people just out of college and everyone's really just trying to fucking figure shit out in their life. And I think it's just, you know, I've been there, still doing that, you know, with a bunch of our friends.
Still there.
But it's just, it was awesome, dude. It was... you know, for a movie in the 80s, I was like, oh, how campy is it going to be?
Right, yeah.
But man, it just, the dialogue, like everything just seems so natural. And then, you know, like I said, I read trivia and they were, you know, the director and writer, Lawrence Kasdan, I think he wrote Indiana Jones. He wrote Empire Strikes Back. Like he wrote a lot of big stuff. And he had these guys stay in the house for a few weeks and just kind of get to know each other. And you could just tell that. And it was just like a cool, I feel like if you're in your early 20s, you know, late 20s, maybe early 30s, this is a movie for you to watch because it's just so good. And seeing like Jeff Gold, like seeing a lot of these actors when they're younger and really before they got really big was just really cool to see.
I'll check it out.
But it's worth watching.
Absolutely.
Great, great soundtrack.
My number 8 is from 2002. Never seen it before. Loved it. I thought it was kind of a classic example of how this writer-director can function and sometimes ceases to function. It got a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 7.2 on IMDb. It's Insomnia from Christopher Nolan.
Oh, okay.
So it is a remake of, I believe, a Norwegian film. But I think he put his own little twist on it. Al Pacino's in it. Robin Williams is in it. And those are the two mains. And it was fucking fantastic. Like, it had all the kind of classic, like, Christopher Nolan twist and pitfall kind of a thing. But just the way it was done, because obviously it's about an insomniac being a detective going to a place in Alaska where the sun never sets. So he gets just, his mind is totally fucked.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it's filmed and pieced together as well. So it was just a really cool, like, mystery, thriller, police, what do I want to say? Like, drama, I guess. But it was really, really cool. It didn't feel dated at all. I feel like a lot of early 2000s movies kind of have that early 2000s stink on them. This didn't. It was
the
very
soundtracks
cool.
And it's the music and the style.
Exactly. The same thing, you know, happens in the early 80s. The soundtrack, it's like this. It was just very good. Like, I was surprised how much I liked it.
Did it have that Nolan feel to it yet? Like, do you think he found himself, his style in that movie yet?
No, because he had already done Memento by this point.
And that was his style, in my opinion. Like, you look back, you're like, wow, Memento is totally a Nolan.
Yeah, so this was a straightforward story, a linear story, but it had twists and turns in it.
Okay.
And again, it was a remake of a Norwegian film, so it wasn't original to him, but I feel like it fell right in his wheelhouse.
Nice.
So he knew this would be a good next film to do.
That's a movie I need to see. I never...
Yeah, it's awesome. I think it's still on HBO Max.
How was Pacino?
He was honestly still really, like, really, really good. This was, you know, before the downturn that was soon to follow. This was still, like, really good Pacino. He played the part fucking perfectly.
Dude, Pacino, all the sound.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck us up.
That's one of the best things I did over break, was I bought Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, my God.
On Blu-ray, and I bought Chinatown on Blu-ray. And I now own those two movies, and those are some of the best. Chinatown.
Oh, I'm going to have your job, shithead.
Chinatown's one I rewatched over break, and it's one of the best movies that's ever been made.
Ever.
Granted, it's Roman Polanski, and while I don't agree with his sexual preferences, I believe as a filmmaker, he's uber talented.
I also
watched, by the way, it's not on my list, but I watched both Wall Street movies over the break, I think. This wasn't before.
I don't fucking remember.
What'd you think? I loved it. Look, it's Oliver Stone. So the first one still, it was fucking great. It felt a little dated at parts, but it still really held up well. The second one was okay. I thought it had an unnecessary, like, love story in it.
I would love to be on set with Shia LaBeouf and Oliver Stone.
Yeah, so it was still very good, because, again, it was still Oliver Stone doing the sequel.
Yeah.
But what else?
I told you.
Oh, it's on a list we're going to do later. Because, like I said, I probably watched fucking 25 movies I never saw.
Yeah, because what we have another list that is movies we didn't like over break.
Yeah, worst things we watched over break.
So yeah, there's like, we've watched a lot.
Yeah, and that's only a 5-part list, but I have honorable mentions.
You have 10 honorable mentions.
So Insomnia, it's still on HBO Max as far as I know, so definitely check it out. By the way, the other things on HBO Max that you should absolutely watch, Clash and Wrath of the Titans are on HBO Max, if you were so inclined.
Damn, bro, not even a half hour into this just about a half hour into this shit talking about
season
that
6
movie.
Off to a strong start.
God damn, you're just waiting for it to shoot me. I won't mention Donald Glover, don't worry. My number eight is a movie that you've been yelling at me to go watch like a grandpa. yells, these kids don't get it anymore.
Is this also the 2002 movie?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, not that one. That one's...
much higher.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is from 2017, another Christopher Nolan movie, Dunkirk.
Mm. What'd you think?
So I watched this movie and another movie that's in my top five of this topic the same night. Really fucking high.
It's in your top five of...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you.
I'll have to edit that.
I'm sorry. I thought it was you're talking about a different
movie. Oh, no. So I watched these two movies about World War II.
Oh, my God.
But I was... But I really wish...
Was Jess home?
No, this was... I forgot
so
where
Jess
she was.
So when Jess came home, were you, like, on the couch in a war helmet, just like, shut the door, the doctors are coming!
I don't know where she was. I don't know if she was hanging with her cousins.
And... I love
but
this
I had
you
the
were
night
like,
to myself.
I have a night home alone. I'm going to get some fucking takeout. I'm going to have a couple of drinks. I'm going to watch some great movie. And you went into fucking brutal World War II movies.
But, war movies are my shit, man.
I love them.
But yeah, Dunkirk was just.
Do you understand what I meant about the B-52s now?
Yeah, just, I don't need to hear them again.
I'm not going
to
do it.
I'll never, ever recover. Like Joe Exotic, I can't recover from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, it was.
So
the fact
good.
That you are in this world, you are living through World War II on sea, in the air, and on land.
Yeah, Normandy Beach, yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck?
So I'll be
brilliant.
Completely honest. That took me a little bit to get.
Did it really?
Yeah. So it's a very simple story. It's about the Normandy Beach invasion. But in classic Christopher Nolan fashion, he took that and just introduced timelines into it.
Yeah.
Where everything took place in different timelines, meaning... The war would have appeared slower to you if you're on land versus in the air.
In the air where it didn't. And even on...
Right.
I felt like it was the slowest at sea, in my opinion.
Maybe it was, but I don't remember.
Well, no, it's just interpretation. Like, you think it's more slower on land, which I
get. Well, I forget what he did. Like, I forget how he broke it down. Because he did do it in layers like that, but it...
Well, you first see it, like, you know, you first see it on land, and then they get to the beach, and then I think, I'm just guessing here, maybe like 30, 40 minutes in, then you are introduced to the pilot
in the air.
Keep
going back
yeah,
and
they keep just kind of keep cutting through it, you know, and...
Pilot's Tom Hardy.
Yep, and I just loved it. I thought it was so good,
I can't believe you
never
saw that
makes me wish I saw it in theaters.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was great.
Because the sound design was great.
And the thing about it is, if you've seen Dunkirk or you plan to see Dunkirk, it's rated PG-13.
Yeah.
Like, it's not gory, but it's harrowing.
Yeah.
He did
you said that word,
I forget his name. He's in a ton of shit, but he was the one captain on, like, the docks and just, like, with the waves and the gunfire and the B-50. Like, it's just, the way he does it is just incredible.
Yeah.
Just a great movie.
Yeah, man. It was, it was something else. Because
that was the follow-up to Interstellar for Christopher Nolan. So everyone's expecting, like, ooh, Dunkirk is going to be this crazy fucking ridiculous. No, it was a war movie. He went from sci-fi to war. It's just very cool. Like, that's the one thing I do respect about him is he does the movies and stories he wants to do, kind of like a Tarantino.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I want to do a war movie. So he went and did a war movie after doing two straight movies about, like, weird action sci-fi stuff. Very cool.
Yeah.
Let's do some plugs before we get to our top two real quick. Where are my plugs?
Where the fuck are the plugs?
Oh, did I leave it here? I sure did. There you go.
All right.
You still unplug that, or are we taking this down now?
We'll take that down.
Okay, never mind. Scratch that from the record.
Strike through, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's all the same stuff after that.
All right. So if you're looking for, do you have a movie idea? Do you want a movie idea to come to fruition? Well, then find Steve Sandwich Hanish on Fiverr.com. Yes, that's Fiverr. With two R's, .com/Steve Hanish. And then if you want to see any of our other work or any other episodes or whatnot, go to our link tree. You'll be able to see our website, our Instagram, our Facebook page, and whatever else we have. I think we still have a Tumblr, correct?
Yeah, I have everything linked to the
you
link
have, yeah,
tree.
Just
link
go
tree.
To
link
go
tree.
To link tree.
I read where we are just because it's a fucking shtick at this point, but everything's on the link tree. Yeah. Just go to our social medias, at Ranting Podcast. You can click on our link tree in the bio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Link tree is amazing.
Oh, it's great.
Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and share wherever you listen. We are on so many platforms that Steve is about to read.
Yes, including Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, iPod, or TuneIn, Laughable, Overcast, Stitcher, Blurberry, Acast, Podcast, Podcatcher, Downcast, Radio Public, Podcast Republic, Podchaser, CastBox, YouTube, Castro, Listen Notes, Amazon Music, Audible, Google Podcasts, Pandora, and Deezer. And you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr at Ranting Podcast, where you can also find our link tree where everything else is. And if you want to get in touch with the show, you can email us rantingravingpodcast@gmail.com.
Cool. Are you ready to get into our final two?
Okay, fucking
man, I'm in real time. I'm regretting my list because I saw some really good stuff that I just didn't put on because things I've watched just are kind of overshadowing it.
Okay,
and I know I know you're gonna have some of it on your list, so I'll just
maybe
have to piggyback
my list. Oh yeah, two.
I'll definitely know. But go ahead with your number seven.
My last two for this episode are both TV shows.
Okay.
Which is a little weird for me because we're just in this thing of like Carrie hasn't seen a lot of TV shows, so I show her those TV shows. We're in one of those right now.
Yeah.
We're starting a rewatch for me on Friday Night Lights. Carrie has never seen Friday Night Lights. I've always considered it one of my favorite shows of all time.
Love that show.
So she actually said the best thing the other night, like because we had a flood in the basement and it had to move. So I bought it on Blu-ray. $48 to buy the whole thing on Blu-ray.
Wow.
So I figured that might be cheaper than subscribing to Hulu again to try to watch the series.
Yeah, and no commercials or anything.
So the PS4 is down here, so we couldn't watch Friday Night Lights for a couple of days. And she was like, man, I really want to watch Friday Night Lights tonight. And I'm like, yes, got her. She's hooked. And it only gets worse or better.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I love that show. They're really quickly.
Worse as in every character story.
When Jess and I first started talking, she was a part of this group where they would rewatch shows and talk about it, like a TV show club or book club. Like they were just
cool.
And you know, Jess was like, "Yeah, we're all watching Friday Night Lights." I'm like, "My God, I haven't watched that in forever." And I rewatched it and I finished it before they did. I just loved it. And at that time, I didn't see the last two seasons.
I can honestly remember that being the first show I binge watched. I remember being able to stop watching.
It came out after the movie, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
The movie was like 06.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the show was, to me, I love the show a little bit more than the movie.
Yeah. So, my number seven is a TV series. It's a weird one for me because I've never talked about this, and I was never really into it that much. But for me, it was always the showmanship and the mystique and the characters that were put forth. Was always just very cool. And like many things, in my opinion today, it's just not as good or as interesting. And one of the most interesting things for me as far as stories and archetypes is the old warrior that can't give it up. It's the plot of my new script. It's an old guy who can't give up what he does for a living. In my script, it's a Western. He's an outlaw. This is called, it's on the WWE Network. It's Undertaker, The Last Ride. So I was never really into wrestling like that, but The Undertaker specifically, and then The Rock and Stone Cold and Goldberg and Triple H and some of those other guys was always interesting to me because I always loved the kind of placating, like this is a character. Their entrances were the coolest part to me. Like once they started wrestling, I didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
But it was always like the entrances or the shit talk.
The music.
Like,
yeah,
the
they
music,
walked
that
out
was
too.
Always very interesting to me, even though I never really watched a whole lot. The Undertaker was always the most interesting to me because he was a guy who, Mark Calloway, never did interviews that was outside of this character. If he was on TV, he was The Undertaker.
Okay.
And it was that way for 30 years. And then just recently, in 2017, he started a documentary because he was going to do his last match at WrestleMania. So it was going to be just a documentary about his last match. And then he did it and couldn't give it up. So this documentary follows the next 3 years or 4 years, I forget when they started filming, of him training, going under surgery, having the match, can't give it up because it was either a bad performance or it was too good and he felt he could keep going.
Didn't he recently retire?
So he actually finally retired
this past year,
2020. Yeah. So it was just a very cool like insider look.
How many episodes?
Like, six, I think. So it was very doable. I had to subscribe to it for like a month. So
what,
it was $10.
Oh, WWE.
Yeah,
channel.
WWE
okay.
Network. There's a free version of it, but this was on the paid version. I wanted to watch it for some reason. And it was a fucking fantastic docuseries. They did an amazing job. And what I don't think people understand is even though it's the outcomes are predetermined. What happens in the match is based on the professionalism of the two wrestlers in the ring. So the injuries they sustain are a lot of times very real. Like the knee surgeries and the back surgeries this guy has undergone is fucking insane. Like, they were going over some of the matches. The one he had, I don't know, 2018 or 2019 with Goldberg when they were both older. Goldberg almost paralyzed him because he didn't do his move correctly. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff within here. I didn't know this.
Yeah.
I thought every single move was scripted. It's not that way. It's just the outcomes. So when somebody gets hurt for real, they have to, like, alter the match. Like, it's a very interesting world that I never dove into, except for I like the mystique of The Undertaker. And this docuseries was super fucking interesting because he is a very charismatic guy, but he has never, ever done interviews except for this past year. Wow. So, like, he was on Hot Ones. He called into, like, Jim and Sam. Like, he's done the interview circuit now. But he never did that before. And this docuseries, like, peels back the curtain where it's like, because he was huge. He's 6'8", like 300 pounds. Like, he's a giant dude. And it was basically just him, like, because he's 50, 55. And he was still taking bumps. Like, it was super interesting.
Like cocaine bumps?
Yeah, exactly. Just to watch, like, the old warrior who can't give it up play out in real life.
Well, it's like the movie The Wrestler.
Exactly. He just couldn't stop wrestling, either because he still felt he could do it or because he disappointed the fans and how his performance wasn't good enough, so he needed to do it one more time. And it wasn't like those, you know, those weird rock documentaries where they can't afford the rights to the music, so it's just garbage, like, canned stuff. This, they would get, like, Stone Cold to talk about it, Triple H. Like, they got all the guys. Vince signed off on it. It's on his streaming network, like... It was legitimate. So if you have WWE Network or you're interested in seeing a really good docuseries about The Undertaker, absolutely check this out. It was fantastic.
Wow. You almost got me semi-interested in wrestling.
Like I said, I never watched it. Yeah. I never watched it on TV. I just loved the mystique of it and, like, the actual real physical ramifications of doing this for a career.
I like that.
Yeah.
My number 7 is a TV show. It's on Apple TV, came out in 2020. And the only reason we have Apple TV is because Jess got a new phone and you got a free subscription for a year.
Okay.
But I believe I found out, like, a subscription for Apple TV is only about $4.99, $5.99 a year, I think.
A year?
Yeah, it's pretty cheap.
I'll say.
Yeah. Starting off. So we might renew it. This TV show came out, like I said, 2020. It's Ted Lasso.
Okay, I've heard it. Jason Sudeikis,
it's based
right?
off a character he made for, like, an NBC commercial or, like, just for soccer, I think, in 2013, 2014. And the promo itself is hilarious. So it's him, creator of Scrubs, Bill Lawrence, who's done, you know, Spin City and a bunch of, and Drew Carey's show. And then a few of the actors within the TV show are also writers. So it's about football coach from Wichita State going over to London and being a coach. And there's owner of the owner of the football club is from Game of Thrones, the Shame Nun, who's going through the streets screaming shame.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She's in it.
Very small part in Game of Thrones.
Smoke show. She's a smoke show in this show, trust me.
Really?
Trust me,
okay.
Dude. I think her name is Hannah Winnington, if you want to look it up. Smoke.
Waddingham?
Show.
Waddingham.
It's just hilarious. And I just love Jason Sudeikis and the character, the owner, is going through kind of the same things in life in the show. One's very negative, one's very being very positive. I just love Jason Sudeikis in this.
Great, yeah.
You've probably seen me quote it or post it.
I've seen a lot of people talking about it. I didn't know where
took
it was.
The Allen Iverson practice speech and implemented it within the film or within an episode, and it was just fucking epic. And it's just because he has, like, he's just a very likable character. And then when something happens, he kind of almost snaps, but he's just kind of like, you can see, like, why he's such a good coach.
Okay.
If you've played any fucking sport, you could just see why he's a good coach, because he gives a shit about his players.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And he puts these young... And, you know, there's these side, you know, stories...
Just like
where,
Coach Taylor, I get it.
Yep, there's these side stories of this, you know, this 22-year-old hot shot, and then there's 35-year-old player who's like, that was me when I was 23. Now I'm this old man on the team. And,
right.
And, you know, it just has, like, some British humor. It's just funny, dude. It's just... It's lighthearted. And it was just so cool. I'm not the biggest fan of Mumford & Sons, but he got the band to do, like, the music for the show, because like they did a music video for him. Like Will Forte, Ed Helms, Jason Bateman, and Jason Sudeikis were in their one of their music videos.
What?
Where they're literally wheeling down pianos down a dirt road and playing music. It's hilarious. But they're boys, which I think is really cool. The soundtrack is awesome. It's just Jason Sudeikis, man, like he's to me, he's so underrated. Like one of my favorite movies ever is We're the Millers, and he's great.
Yeah.
In it.
Oh, that's a great movie.
But he's so good in this. Yeah. Like he's so fucking likable. I've never met like it's almost too good to be true, because then the promo he's kind of like not a dick, but he's just like he knows nothing about soccer. He's like, you know, win or lose, we'll do. Oh no, we can do a tile. You could do ties in this sport. What's the fun in that? Like kind of, you know.
Yeah.
But it's really really good, man. It's worth the watch if you have Apple TV for the listeners out there. You know, but if it's cheap, I don't know what's really on Apple TV besides this, but. This is worth it.
Right. That's why I never bothered, because they don't have a library. It's just literally like five shows that you pay for.
They have a movie from the Russo brothers with Tom Holland in it where it looks pretty interesting, where I think he's like robbing a bank because he's coming home from war. I'll do that now that we have that. But yeah, there was nothing really. When Apple TV came out, they were like, oh, the morning show that Jennifer Aniston won for last year. I don't give a shit about that kind of stuff. Yeah. Ted Lasso, though, is winning all these awards now for writing. He won an award. Mama Status won an award.
Well, it's just crazy because she is just a brutal nun in Game of Thrones. So
yeah,
you only see that part of the
place. Yeah, but then in Ted Lasso, you see everything.
Large tracts of land.
Like I said to Jess, I was really in the mood for milk watching that show. All right.
My last one for this episode.
Number
six, best thing I watched over break. Was a TV series that came out in 2018 on Showtime, so I wanted to see it, but could never see it because I never had Showtime except for a brief period of time when I think I signed up for DirecTV and watched Dice's show, okay. And then my free trial ended. But now, I forget where it was. I think it was on Prime. It's Escape from Dannemora.
I haven't started it yet, but yeah.
Oh, it's fucking fantastic. 90% Rotten Tomatoes, 8.0 on IMDb. Fantastic acting from everyone. Dude, Patricia Arquette in it is unrecognizable and fucking fantastic. So this is based around a thing I remember happening on the news, is an inmate's escape from a New York state prison, and it was like a month-long manhunt for
in upstate New York. Yeah.
And I remember hearing about this, because I remember going to a concert. I forget what concert it was. It was a metal show, and I remember joking that like this would be a hilarious place for them to show up, because they would just get beaten to death by a bunch of metalheads. Like, it was just, I remember hearing about the story and thinking that was a crazy story, because they only got out because they started fucking this unfuckable security guard or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember the specifics of it. But so this came out. Somebody wrote a screenplay immediately and gave it to Ben Stiller. And he wanted to do it so, and that's the thing, Ben Stiller directs it, the whole thing. He wanted to do it accurately, based on actual events. So they waited a couple of years until all the pieces came out, and then he did an actual, legitimate, factual, I think 8-part TV series, limited run on this Escape from Dannemora Prison in New York State, and it's fantastic. Benicio Del Toro's in it, and fucking Paul Dano. Just incredible. It's an incredibly well done show. It's a little bit slow paced, but it works because it's about these two guys trying to escape from a prison. So it's they have a regimented schedule. It was a slow process that they worked on for a very long time to try to escape. So everything was done intentionally and everything worked.
Two of some of the best actors in that too. Like, in the game, two of the best underrated actors.
Yes, absolutely. And then, like
Paul
I said,
Dano doesn't get enough credit. I'm sorry.
Paul Dano and Benicio Del Toro are fucking fantastic. Benicio, even when he doesn't try, I think is great. But the thing about this is Patricia Arquette steals the show. Like, you don't think she can't? She does.
And where the fuck has she come out of? Like, not out of nowhere, but she's, like, been winning a few, like, Emmys.
Been around, but...
No, she's been around.
Boardwalk Empire, too,
yeah,
but
she's been around.
She was... She's always been Patricia Arquette acting. This, she literally fucking transformed into Tilly, the security guard. Like, it was utterly incredible. And the guy who plays her husband's fucking heartbreaking. He's amazing.
Putting you on the spot right now. Out of the three, Dano, Del Toro... Arquette, rank them 1 to 3. Who is the best in this TV show?
In the show? Arquette, Daniel, Del Toro.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, and again, they're all different enough characters where it's...
My dad loves this limited series. Like, he couldn't get enough of it when it came out.
Yeah. Because
he remembered
it. They all play different enough characters where I don't want to spoil anything. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic show, and anyone who has Amazon Prime should absolutely go check this out right now.
Yeah.
It's so good, dude.
All right. So,
give it to me.
I'm sticking to my guns. I think right, we talked about this movie and you just kind of slaughtered it when we texted about it, but yeah, you did.
that doesn't sound like
you just
me.
Said you don't give a shit about deaf people, basically. No, you didn't say that. I'm kidding. It's the movie Sound of Metal. And I found out that the writer wrote Place Beyond the Pines and Blue Valentine. Derek,
that's amazing. I didn't make fun of this movie.
No, you're just... like, nah, I'm not going to see it, man. I don't give it. I saw sign language. I was out. You tapped out. That's what you said. You really didn't say that you didn't give a shit about that. We're not trying to cancel each other.
That doesn't sound like me.
But Riz Ahmed, I saw him first in the limited series on HBO, The Night Of.
Oh, that guy. Yeah,
and then
yeah.
He was actually in this movie called The Four Lions I've brought up, which is hilarious about, you know, I think Arab people from Iran trying to become, like, I don't know the correct term, but just trying to learn how to go on planes and bomb them. It was an IFC comedy movie. Like, it was hilarious.
What?
Yeah, it was definitely could not make it in this climate that we're in. And then, you know, he was in Rogue One. He's been in a few other things, but
okay,
he was try to pretend to give a shit.
I get him and the other guy confused that was in, like, Hereditary, and he's going to be in that Green Knight movie.
I don't know his name.
I get them confused. Okay. Get them mixed
up. So it opens up, they're like this metal punk band and they're at a show and he's playing drums really fast and the sound fades and he's like he's going, you know, he's like, what's going on?
Right, right.
And then throughout the movie, you know, he just has so much damage to his ear because of playing music, and he is, I think, dating his band partner. Like, they're in a relationship. They're a couple. And, you know, it just gets so bad to the point where he goes to this, I guess, school or this house, and he lives there and he learns sign language. And he's just, his whole mission in the whole movie is to make money, get money to get surgery so he can play drums again. He could be with the girl. And
It's a movie.
It's a movie. And it's just it's heartbreaking, man, because it's like, I don't know. I think, which is pretty cool, is like they actually had actual deaf people within the movie, and the supporting actor, he himself is deaf, and he's an actor as well. And, you know, the lead actor learns sign language, a lot of cool elements to it. But just for me, it's like a character that, like, had this one thing going for him, and it's just kind of like you take the rug out from underneath them and they got nothing. You know, I think, like, that's, I don't know what the best example is, but, like, you know, you think about, I always kind of correlate it to, like, hip hop, right? A lot of hip hop artists, most of them, from what you read, and say, they didn't finish high school, you know, or let's say an athlete who didn't go to college. You know, perfect example is Friday Night Lights, the movie. Mm-hmm. The running back hurts his knee.
Yeah.
Can't really play. What else does he have? He's probably not that smart.
Right.
That is heartbreaking to me. Like, when you just don't, like, when you put all your eggs in this basket,
yeah,
and that shit drops and there's nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's
probably why I didn't watch it, because I don't want to feel anything.
But it just really, I think you kind of, and all jokes aside, you kind of said something like, it just looked mad depressing and I don't want to watch it right now. Yeah. But it was really good. It was, it unfolded really well, and the sound design was phenomenal and everything. But, you know, as I'm watching, I'm like, this has too much of a fucking Blue Valentine, Place Beyond the Pines feel. Found out it was the writer. He didn't direct it, but it was the writer who wrote the screenplay.
That's pretty cool.
And this was a toss-up, and I'm not trying to spoil anything on your list. This was a toss-up between Sound of Metal and Trial of Chicago 7, and I really like Trial of Chicago 7, but the five other movies in my part two,
couldn't bump it.
I just couldn't, and I feel fucking terrible, because Trial of Chicago 7, I feel like, is winning everything.
Well, so that's a good tease for next episode.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So, without further ado, we're out of here.
play a game.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, but that is a good tease for it.
That is a good tease, because it is also in my top five, and I'll explain why maybe it's higher than yours.
It's not on my top five.
Oh.
It's not on my list at all.
It's not on your list at all?
And I'm going, oh, shit. Gotta protect my face, not my nuts. I don't use them anymore. Wait, what? Yeah, we're playing a game.
The game is... where are we? Royal Times.
Royal Times.
Where I will name an actor and you will tell me their highest grossing film, and for extra points, how much that was.
Now, are you going to just give me the actor's name, or are you going to fucking give me a whole spiel?
I'm just going to give you the name.
In 2006, this actor read a script, and in 2009, he ended up doing this movie.
This actor, whose best role was the character of Motherfucker Jones. I want you to tell me, Chris, what was the movie that grossed the most that was starring Jamie Foxx?
Why would you do this to me?
I'll give you a hint. It's not the movie in which he plays Motherfucker Jones.
Oh, yeah. And I know he recently did Soul, but I'm wondering if he did any other animated movies.
Okay. Maybe you're onto something. Maybe you're not.
Yeah, I'm definitely not.
Maybe I'm in it to win it this season.
That's doubtful.
Since I lost the last one in epic
We're keeping points, right, still?
I got the game point totals right here. It is 0-0, right. My friend. Clean slate as it gets.
I only get one guess, right? No, three guesses.
Three. Should shoot you every time you get it wrong.
Soul? What the fuck? Django Unchained.
Sorry, people at home, that got a little close to the microphone.
Yeah, just shoot me, bro. Collateral? That was point blank, dude.
This is the best idea I think I've had for the podcast.
Oh, my God, concussion. Right, what was the movie?
That was Will Smith.
You tell the truth.
The movie was Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I forgot he was in that heap of shit.
Yeah, he played like Electro, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, he was balding like a motherfucker.
So, just over $200 million.
All right.
This is adding a lot of extra pressure to the game. I did not think this out properly.
All right. What is Bill Murray's highest grossing movie of all time? You just look like Sal from Impractical Jokers when he's got to do some crazy shit.
Bill Murray's highest grossing film of all time.
Don't cover your tits. Shooting them either way.
Is it Zombieland? Ah! Is it... I feel like an asshole.
You're never going to guess it.
Never? Is it Garfield?
You should get shot in the face for that.
The tit.
Fucking Garfield.
God damn it, bro. It's so difficult because he's a comedic actor. Is it? No. Ghostbusters.
It is 2016's The Jungle Book. He was a voice in that movie.
God fucking damn it, you're right.
It made $364 million domestically, $953 million worldwide.
It was Baloo, wasn't it?
I believe, yeah.
God fucking damn it. That was a great movie, by the way.
I never saw it.
The Jungle Book
I heard it was really good.
And Mowgli were both fucking amazing.
I heard they were like actually surprisingly good. People were shocked how good
they were.
They
were fantastic, yeah. Yeah, okay, great. That game got off to just a rousing start.
And I got a concussion.
An epic barn burning of 0-0.
The bullets really do make it a lot crazier.
They do. All right, close us out, dickbag.
All right, guys. For Ranting and Raving, I'm Chris.
I'm Sanguish.
And we are out of here.
We should mate.
The Ranting and Raving is done for now, but it's never over. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. At Ranting Podcast, and follow your hosts at Sandwich Hanish and at Orangio_C. Until next time, this is the voice from the sky and in your head, Jazz Walker, and you've been listening to the Ranting and Raving Podcast. Stay clean.